Let's hoppy to it.
What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. Let's just get right to it. On the phone line is a guy I grew up listening to, the legend known as Eddie Volkmann. He is on the show. What's going on, bro?
Not much. I just got off the air like 4 minutes ago.
So how is that going? Where do you work right now? I know the answer, but where do you work right now? Because a lot of times whenever like Jobo makes a wacky post, people are like, Eddie needs to get back on the radio. So where can people hear you?
It's we call it Star 96.7. It's WSSR FM, and it's based out of a Crest Hill, like the Joliet area, and it serves mostly the southwest burbs. But you know, these days, I think they said 33% of people listen to radio streaming. So it's going to come to a point where you don't even need antennas or signals anymore. So it's about a tenth the audience we used to have on B96. But it's still Chicagoland area, and, you know, it's a lot of people, and we do contests, and it's radio. It's fun. It's what I've always loved doing. It's, you know, in my blood, so I could hang it up, but I like doing it too much.
So I was thinking about the Eddie and Jobo show, just kind of getting ready for this interview today, and I think there's a lot of shows I liked growing up, but I think you guys were the one show where, like, I would be waiting at the bus, and it would be like negative 20 out, and like a Marge Mick douche prank call or a suburban crime report. There was something about the way you, Jobo, and then it became Erica. You guys just made me forget that it was cold out. Like, you guys were the most Chicago show of any Chicago show ever. It was amazing.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, a lot of it, and a lot of the, not there wasn't a lot of hate, but the haters of the show, I think, were people that couldn't stand that we were just so comfortable. We weren't trying too hard. We were just having a real good time. And if we always felt if somebody else was enjoying listening as much as we were enjoying doing it, then we were successful. You know, we didn't come in there every day, we got to do a killer show. We just came in and said, let's have our usual fun, you know, and I've always been that kind of guy on or off the air. So, you know, I was in Disney World with my wife once and started entertaining kids by doing Mickey Mouse voices. And she said, hey, you're not Eddie V down here. And I go, you don't understand. That's who I am no matter where I am. You know, and one of the best compliments I ever got was people meeting me and saying, I think you're the same guy on the air as off. And, you know, good for me, I guess.
I came up with this sort of like not slogan for the Eddie and Jobo show, but maybe just for you overall. You were like the original dad joke. Like before dad jokes were a thing, you guys were just a walking dad joke pun. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I got that from my father. So they literally were dad jokes. You know, when my dad, Harry Volkmann, one of the longtime weathermen in Chicago, he did them all the time. They came back out of a Amoco gas commercial where a guy was trying to start his car by rubbing his lucky rabbit's foot. And the commercial was, don't count on luck, use Amoco Ultimate, whatever. And then they came back to the weather segment. My dad said, I know a guy who lost his rabbit's foot and missed starting his car by a hair, you know, and he was always doing that. And now when people, unfortunately, see, I am a fan of puns and wordplay. In fact, on my last station, I did something called Edward Play, like Edward and
yeah.
Wordplay. And even the title of it was kind of some wordplay. And so when people use the term dad joke, you know, I'll make a pun on Facebook and people go, dad joke, almost like insulting me by calling it that. And I said, when did the cleverness of puns just be reduced to dad joke? You know, but I understand why it's that way, because some of them are just very basic, dumb things, you know. A guy, my wife threw a bottle of omega-3 pills at me, but fortunately my injuries were only superficial, you know.
Man.
So
my favorite part was your prank calls. You had a prank call, I think, So I first heard about you guys when my dad would drive, I forget which exit, I believe it was Cumberland. My grandpa lived in the Six Corners part of Chicago. It's where my dad grew up. So I loved looking at billboards because I didn't have any brothers or any siblings. So I was just me in a car with my dad, and we would visit my grandpa every weekend. And there was one time in like 03, I saw an Eddie and Jobo billboard, and I was like, I need to listen to the show. It was like, wake up with Eddie and Jobo. So that morning I listened, and it was when the Meet the Fockers movie came out, and it was Marge McDouche prank calling all the movie theaters saying that the movie needs to be canceled or whatever. And that was like the first time I ever listened to Eddie, and ever since then I remember I was like, this is my show.
Now wait a minute, was it now Marge McDouche would have no problem with that? Are you sure you weren't thinking of Mrs. Pillowfop?
Yes, that's what it was.
She was the overprotective soccer mom. I think that title's awful. I can't believe it. I'm going to have to talk to your manager. She was the original Karen.
That's what it was. Yes, man.
Yeah.
How much work did you guys put into those calls? Because you'll listen to shows now and it's half-assed, but man, you guys, those were some amazing calls.
Here's a couple of things. When I was on doing the show before, while Jobo was doing nights, I did the show myself for a couple of years, never caught on as much as the two of us, because obviously there was a chemistry there that was, you know, it just match made in heaven. Well, I scripted out a lot of my comedy, and I worked very hard on it. It turned out Jobo was not very good at following a script, so we had to learn to do improv. I bet we could have gone to Chicago, you know, the second city, and pulled it off. In fact, we actually opened at some comedy clubs. One time I tried actual comedy, and it didn't go over well. The next time, Jobo and I just went and did what we do, and it was like improv stuff, and it killed, and we were the opening act, and the first comedian came up and said, we have to follow that. And a lot of it was just train of thought. You know, he had a weird way of thinking, and I did too, and I can make everything into a joke. You know, that's why I meet women that say, I just want a man with a sense of humor, and then 2 years into the marriage, is everything a joke to you? That's why I'm on my third wife. But anyway, so those crank calls were basically ad-libbed, and as they went. Now, obviously, we would tape them, because if they went badly and they weren't funny, we wouldn't use them. But the thing is, they were real people, which even at that time, and I hope to God the FCC statute of limitations has run out, even at that time, it was illegal to call people and put them on the air without their knowledge. So if we were ever questioned, Jobo, my designated liar, would always say, oh, of course, we're using actors. And we weren't. You know? And the love tests where, hi, it's Marge McDouche. We have some flowers for the woman of your choice. You are anonymously. Who would you like to give them to? Evelyn. And then you'd hear some other girl on the phone go, you son of a bitch. Because it was not Evelyn. It was, you know, someone else. So that was the love test, which then became, well, Ryan Seacrest stole it and did Ryan's Roses. And everybody around the country did War of the Roses. And that bit got repeated everywhere. But we were really calling people. These days, people still do that contest and that call. But it's all actors because the FCC would crack down on you. You know, and I would have followed the rules. That's why I had my designated rule breaker, Jobo, who just said, but it's boring to use real actors, you know, use actors. We got to keep on using real people. So we did and got away with it. I think some of the management turned a blind eye to it because they knew it was getting ratings and it was good stuff. You know, natural reactions are the best. I can't stand listening to certain morning shows now piped in from out of town, A, for one thing, and B, knowing that they got actors and then fake laughter in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And it's horrible. And yet some people fall for it. You know, I have relatives who say, oh, I love that Brooke and Jeffrey. And I go, you realize all those calls are actors. You know, nobody would stay on the phone that long. You know, so anyway.
And the weird thing for me, Eddie, is I'm not going to say it because I work with people that do fake prank calls, but I do work with people that do fake prank calls. And the weird thing was when I was single, I would go on dates, and this show in Tampa is insanely popular that does like the Okay, so I've said enough because they might be listening, but it was so awkward, Eddie. People would be like, so are those calls real that happen at 7:30 and it has a specific name for the segment and like it's very well known in Tampa? And I would have to be like, yeah. And it was like the most awkward thing because some of them are like, well, your face is saying you're lying. And it's like, well, what do you want me to say? Like, insert date here. Yeah. Like, did you ever have that where like people didn't believe that it was real?
No, mostly, you know, and in fact, we occasionally did use a couple of actors, but only, you know, for a setup maybe, but I've never had anybody say that can't be real.
Yeah.
You know, they'd say, was that a real call? And we could honestly say, yes, it was. I was doing a bit called the Senseless Survey, which I would call and ask a bunch of inane questions.
I remember, yeah.
A lot of wordplay, and I was still calling real people, and you know I had to tell management myself saying, oh yeah, no, those are, you know, because we tried using a couple of salespeople in the office, and they'd be like, what is this? What are you talking about? This is ridiculous! I can't believe it, and it was just so bad, you know. So I said, you know, we gotta. You know, got to catch people off guard. But what I do is call people, you know, I would record them, you know, in the morning at like in the 9 to 10 o'clock hour by calling some like East Coast places. Like I'd call little towns in Alabama or West Virginia where they wouldn't recognize me or the station or anything. And plus when you call like rural areas, they're nicer and they stay on the phone longer.
Eddie, I know everybody asks you about Jobo. Jobo's insanely polarizing on social media. It's probably the most bizarre account I've ever seen. How do you explain to people when people ask you if you're out and about at a gig? And I guess since the shows ended in 2008, but then came back in 2011, overall, whenever somebody asks you about your relationship with Jobo or what Jobo's like what's your go-to answer when people ask about Jobo?
I just tell them that he, you know, made the decision when we were offered a really hefty job offer at WLS. He made the decision he didn't want to do it. They didn't want one of us without the other. So we basically just went our separate ways. And I got mad and I blew up on social media for a short time. But then I thought, you know, that's like, we had too many good years together. So I don't hold animosity, but I also don't sit there and pine away for the old days, even though some people will always remember that. And on his post, they go, you and Eddie shall get back together. and I'm like, that it's just not going to happen. Everybody romanticizes the past, but the things we did, and I've talked to like Mancow, and he goes, we couldn't do the things we used to do on the air. And it's true. He couldn't send turd out and all the things he did. Radio has changed. Attention spans have changed. And your approach has to change to appeal to those people. It has to be quicker and more relatable to them. And they don't idolize the morning guys like they once did. They're looking for people that are like them, that they can relate to. You know, they're YouTube buddies. So you gotta come up with something that's short and interesting and different. And you can, you know, the same old bits won't work all the time. Anyway, so I tell them, I direct them to his social media. I say, if you want to get in touch with him, he's on Facebook. And some people come back to me going, what is going on? Because he has gotten a little crazy his lifestyle is different. And he says what he wants and he has not much of a filter. And that's driven off a lot of people. And people then message me and go, what happened? I go, nothing really happened. He's always been that kind of a guy. He just, you know, he, unlike other people, was a very different person off the air than he was on. But he was also a very talented artist, and his, you know, he might be kind of a tortured soul and that drives artistry. Look how many Hollywood people and famous scientists and musicians were kind of, you know, their personal lives were all over the place, but that's what drove their artistry.
So you brought up the name Manka. What did you, do you have a relationship with him? Because I went back and forth with you guys, Manka, and like maybe 10% of the time Drex. But it was pretty much you guys and Manka. What's he like? Because I've never met him. I've sent DMs to him. And the way he talks manically on air is the same way he'll send texts. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever said, I've ever seen. So what's your relationship like with that guy?
He respects me because I respect him. I've never badmouthed him the way, I mean, he takes a lot of hate, but it's because he's a polarizing figure too. And he very much like Jobo is just a guy who's just a little off kilter. But if you understand the nature of the beast and that we're all trying to do the same thing, you can be friends with those guys. I mean, you know, Steve Dahl came across that way, but off air, he was like one of the most quiet, humble people you'd ever meet, you know? So it just depends on the person. So I think he likes me because I understand what makes him tick, or at least try to understand it. I don't just write him off when he explodes, you know? And, and you're right. His manic, he'll text me.
Yeah.
He'll go 6 months without texting me, and then he'll just send me something.
Well,
you know,
it was amazing. I sent him a DM. I was like drunk at a bar, so I was like overly confident, and like this like 2 years ago, and I'm like, I should just see if he wants to come on. So I did write like a professional message. It wasn't like I had like slurred text, but like I would never message Mancow if I was sober. And I was like, hey man, I'm a huge fan. I grew up listening to you. Would you want to call in sometime? And he sent the most Mancow Moeller thing ever. And it's the same way he talks on air, was in text. He goes, could I call into the show? But he didn't like spell out the word show. He would go like SH dot, dot, dot. Yes. Do I want to call into dot, dot, dot? No. Should I? I don't know. And it was like the way he typed it was like the way he talks on air. And I was like, yeah. Honestly, Eddie, that's more what I need than him on the show. Like as a fan growing up on you and Eddie and Jobo, like the fact that I got a response and I got a bizarre answer like that, I go, that's probably better than having him on a show, is having that moment where you get the most, I think it's the most bizarre message I've ever received from any human ever. It was amazing.
Yeah, like I say, he'll send me something, like a picture of something out of nowhere, and then another day, you know, it'll be noon, and I'll get a text that says, strange business, huh? I'll be like, what? Yeah, oh yeah, it is. I mean, it always is. Why particularly at noon on a Tuesday, is it? And I'd write it back, and then he wouldn't respond. But, you know.
So, do you think you learned how to deal with these egos from, like, because your dad, I never met him, but we all know he was a great man who was humble. Were there people that he worked with, either behind the scenes or on air, that were similar to Jobo and Mancow, where they were kind of like troubled a little bit, and maybe seeing that made you realize you didn't want to be like that?
Well, I don't think as much in television, because TV has to come across as those, you know, those polished kind of, especially then, you know, these days you can be a little more whack job on TV because everything's gone in a million directions, but the anchor people, but he did have people that were like oil and water with him. Like, he loved doing jokes and being folksy, and he worked with Floyd Calber. It was a real old school name, but he was generally known as a curmudgeon. He was a grumpy network news serious kind of guy, and he was going to deliver the story like Walter Cronkite, and my dad would come on and make some pun, and it'd, you know, be like, he's ruining the credibility of my newscast. You know, but that was in like the Anchorman 70s days when I was a kid, just watching. You know, I was not aware of the dynamics of that. But my dad said there were always, you know, some egos and stuff. But like me, I mean, he taught me this too. It's like getting along is really not that hard. You just understand everybody's foibles. You avoid the people that are grumps. You pal up with the people that are pleasant to work with, and you make friends with people who take life not so seriously. And, you know, I think that's the way in any workplace. You kind of tend to find the people with similar mindset.
Who were some of the on-air hosts at B96 that you were buddies with?
oh God, everybody, Brian Middleton.
Yes.
Gary Spears was one of the greatest guys. And Jobo, and then let's see, Brian Middleton was there forever. Jay Nice, who ended up taking over mornings after we left, and even Gabe Ramirez, who's the current morning guy, he was my intern, and I used to play basketball with him and softball. And then he came up to me one night and said, "Hey, you know, I'm going to school at UIC studying broadcasting." And I said, and he goes, "I'm about to graduate." And I said, "How long have I known you and been playing hoops with you? Why didn't you ever intern with us?" So within a week, I got him an internship. After the 6 months his internship ended, he told me, "Well, this is my last day." He tells the story that I left the studio during the show to go find the bosses and say, "You can't let this guy go. He's computer literate. He's bilingual. He's fun. He's young, cool, relatable." So they ended up hiring him as an assistant producer. Then he became the producer. And then when Jay Nice was let go, he's now the morning guy. And the numbers aren't awesome, but, you know, they aren't for anybody these days like they used to be. Because, you know, the younger the audience skews, like top 40, the more, you know, Spotify's and things are slicing the audience down. So,
how hard was it for you when you guys got let go back in 08?
The hardest thing was there was some clumsy management about it. You know, we were both getting way out of the demo. You know, you're supposed to hit to 12 to 35, 12 to 34 with a top 40, you know, and we're both like over 45 at the time. So naturally, and numbers were not what they once were. It was kind of a financial thing because we had another year left on the contract making like $1.7 million each. And, it just wasn't. And that was after the fall of 2008. So what they should have done after 20 years of being on that station should have come to us and said, "Hey, listen, we need to make a change, you know, for financial reasons. And we'd like you guys to go out, like, you know, it looked like our idea, saying, hey, Teddy and Joe, we have really enjoyed this, but, you know, it's time for a younger thing to get, you know, just fashion it some way." Losing the job was no big deal because, you know, they had to pay out that contract for a year. I went to Italy for a month and then got back and went to Hawaii for 3 weeks. I mean, the money was not anything. Losing the job wasn't. And we knew that we were still viable, you know, to be rehired somewhere, which we eventually were by the same company. But it was the way with which they did it that really bit them in the ass. And they've never really recovered from it. I've had people tell me within the last year they've been doing an appearance and people come up and say, "What up at Eddie and Jobo?" This is talking 13 years ago.
I know.
So they shouldn't have, you know, they had people boycotting the station. And it's like, let us make it seem like it was our idea. People could still be mad, but they wouldn't have hated the station. You know, so it just was not a well thought out exit, especially when it was coming to an end of a contract. Mankow recently left WLS. But they let him, you know, and it was, his contract was not renewed, but nobody said that. He said, there's just no joy in it anymore. The world's become too mean a place. I just don't want to do this anymore. You know, like, but at least they let him say it and leave on his terms. And the general manager said, we've had a nice relationship and now we're going to try something else. They didn't just, you know, say nothing and try to hide behind a desk. So
is there a part of you? Is there a part of you that's glad that you didn't go his route or Johnny B's route where, like, with the new ratings, PPM, that you guys didn't make, like, four comebacks and, like, things just would have looked bad? Sort of like with how Drex went to B96 and bombed. Is there kind of a bit of your pride that's glad that even though you guys didn't go out on your terms that it makes you guys look really good, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And you know what? That could have happened if we had taken the WLS job. But on the other hand, that format was set up to be pretty good, and they tried a few hosts, and I'm really happy for Dave Fogel because he's a great guy. He's another good guy in radio, and he's held that position for a long time. And WLS FM, just by nature of the format and the legendary call letters and just the simplicity with which they, you know, just do it right, they're always like top five, and you know, and morning show gets good numbers and all that. And I'm thinking if we had taken that, we could have, you know, we could have still been doing that and done it till we were the Dick Viandis of mornings, you know. So, but then again, it also could have failed. Here's another thing: is I don't think Jobo ever really bought into the PTM way of doing things. You know, when you say something's got to be at 7:30, it's got to be, and your length of bits and all that stuff. And he just wasn't buying it. You can tell by some of his posts and the way he still uses the same expressions and other things that he's kind of stuck in. He wants to do the same show that he used to do, and that won't necessarily work. So
I saw the most bizarre post by him the other day. He was listening to Sirius Radio, and it was like 80s radio, 80s on 8 or something. And he like was talking up the song while the DJ was talking up the song. And he was like typing it, making it out to be like he was getting an offer there. I don't even know if that's what he was doing. It was the most bizarre post ever.
No, he's been implying, like, should I take the 80s?
Yeah.
He's been doing that a lot. And it's kind of like when Howard Stern said, I don't know if I would take Simon Cowell's place on American Idol. And it's a tricky thing that guys like that do when the real thing is, did anybody ask you? You know, and, you know, they didn't. So, you know, and I'm going to go see my agent, and I hate to, you know, I'm not here to bust him out, but there's a lot of, let's just say programmers and management around in radio, they look at your Facebook too, and you can disorient a lot of people by things you say, because some of that stuff stays up forever. Or at least it stays in people's minds for a long time. So,
what was the vibe like at CBS Radio and the previous companies it was? Because, I mean, you had 670, you had WCKG. What's it like? Because in Tampa, where I work at, people don't, like, pre-COVID, it wasn't like everybody was friends, but you would have, like, luncheons where all the DJs would get together, the promotions team would get a shout-out, sales would flex. You know what I mean? Is that what it's like in Chicago radio, where people get and hang out in the office, or is it very separate since it's the third biggest market, if that makes sense?
You know, all the stations were in the same building, but, you know, XRT and News Radio and US 99 and all that, but they were on three separate floors, so six stations could be separated, you know, pretty well, you know, on one half of the side and the other half. But there were functions, you know, where, you know, we would all get together, and some people were comfortable with that. I thought it was great. I'd compare notes and all that. You know, here again, Jobo would want it, he'd rather take the stairs in the morning than ride up at the same time as Steve Dahl and Ramblin' Ray. He just didn't like to see the other radio guys. So I you know, you'd have to ask him why, but I just got to be like, what are you doing on your show? And if it sounded interesting, I go, oh, you know what? That's a good idea. You know, not stealing ideas, but some subject matter, or, you know, that guy that was streaking through Grant Park. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. You know, so again,
when it's
nature of the beast,
when it's all said and done, Eddie, how do you want people to remember you and to remember the Eddie and Jobo show?
I want them to remember that as a little, you know, edgy and fun and a joy of life in the morning. And with me, I always say, if I could, you know, graduate life with the same respect that my father had, you know, people thought of him as just a good guy with a sense of humor who was there to lighten your day, not necessarily give you the best weather forecast, but when you after you watched him, you would feel good about things, you'd feel happy, you know. And part of that was kind of part of my problem when I did radio without Jobo, because when I first started, it was Brandmeier, Murphy in the Morning, you know, Steve Dahl, all these guys. And I even had one program director once tell me, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're not enough of an asshole to be a good morning man. I said, well, screw you, go to HE Double Hockey Sticks. No, no. But so And I eventually knew what he meant, that you have to have that edge to cut through and kind of stir up a little trouble and get yourself noticed. So Jobo was my designated, you know, troublemaker. But in the long run, and especially because that style of radio, like I said, those superstar, big name guys, you know, there's not a Steve Dahl standing in Sox Park blowing up disco records anymore. The radio superstars aren't the same. The people they like are the ones that they relate to and find comfortable and feel good spending the day with on the radio. So I've morphed my style into less, you know, look at me and more, you know, I know what makes you laugh, you know.
Well, Eddie, you have a whole legacy of laughs, man. I can't explain to you. I did not want to ever get up for class. There were days when my parents would literally yell at me to get up for class. And the one thing that got me up in the morning was you guys, man. You guys were the best show to ever reach Chicago. And I can't thank you enough for the memories. And it's been a lot of fun having you on the show.
Well, as Father O'Fondlin would say, no, never mind. Wait. And this is the OJ. Yeah. Oh, boy. We had a lot of fun. Oh, man.
Thank you, Eddie. This means a lot.
Good to talk to you. You're in Tampa, huh?
Yeah, I've been here for 6 years. I worked for Rover for like 3 months and then got let go because I got blackout drunk on St. Patrick's Day. So then I moved to Tampa and got the hell out of Cleveland. And honestly, it's better off. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, my best friend from high school, Bob Marcus, publishes the magazine called The Florida Info Guide. It's basically Tampa St. Pete. It's that thing in all the airports with all the
coupons. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been down there like 20 years. So now he says, how about my Rays? I go, shut up. You and I went to Cub games as high school.
And by the way, him saying, how about them Rays? Like, you know how people will say, how about them Cubs? Acting like it's their team, but there's millions of people. Your buddy saying, how about them Rays? That's actually his team because nobody cares about the Rays. So he can have it.
All right. All right, man. Well, thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thank you, Eddie.
All right.
All right, bye.
See ya.